Special Affairs Committee, March 11, June 350, work session.
Meeting will come to order. Mr. Lopezman is present, Representative Kielandowski and Richard Zerke. House Bill 2341.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2341 was heard by Subcommittee C on February 11th and was appeared at work sessions on March 1st and March 2nd. The bill deals with legalization of bingo and amends the current statutes in that area, ORS 30.740, 167.117, and 167.158. There was an outgrowth of the discussion during the two work sessions. Council was instructed to draft new amendments, which would focus the issue of whether or not local governments may ban bingo. Therefore, you should see the amendments in your folder. Also see your amendments on the definition of the word bingo. I don't know which issue you want to take first, the definition of the word or the policy question.
Well, I think my preference would be just to start through the bill. Okay. And let's resolve the problems as we've identified them. And what's the definition of the first one, is it?
Then, yeah, it seems as though the definition is first, and you've got an array of proposed definitions in front of you. The most recent is entitled Proposed Bingo Definition, Second Revision. It incorporates in one paragraph the, all the suggestions that were made, so you might start that.
Does everyone have that particular definition in front of them? That's the Bronsted Note 1977 definition.
Yes.
Any discussion? Yeah, motion on the amendment. Representative Blumenauer moves, I presume, Bronk of March 10.
Bronk of 10, second division.
Stacy? Representative Fenner?
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether you could ever have cards that were stacked in essence so that people were just uncovering numbers, and you ever happen to have bought a card or a number of cards in which the correct pattern eventually appeared, would that game would be permitted, or whether this is only something that happens as a result of an announcer or someone announcing a series of random numbers picked at random.
Well, the standard card is generally, will always be used with a caller. The caller will draw a ball out of a machine and call a number out, and then the number will be X'd off and covered on the board. On the other side, that you say open, these things can be dispensed out of the machine, which means they would be stacked, or they might be thrown loosely into a jar and drawn from a jar at random by someone. This is why I thought it might be encouraged to eliminate the word call, or else make the distinction between being called and drawn clear. But they could be stacked. Not in a particular order so that anybody would know what was laying, let's say, four cards down, five cards down, or something like that. So the numbers would be concealed.
Are you comfortable with this definition?
This one seems to be perfectly clear. Now, you either uncover it or you cover it. And there's no distinction as to whether it's called or whether it's received by a seller. It's obvious that everything would be covered by this definition. It's plain and simple and brief. I mean, it's the idea of a definition.
Is it a special definition? Is it a
benefit? This definition would permit the games to be played by individuals, I take it, not as part of a bingo game as we might commonly understand it, where there's a large gathering of people and the person calls out the numbers. But under this definition, as I understand, someone could walk into the Elk Club or something of that nature and pay money and get a little card and play bingo all by himself is the correct thing to say. And I wonder if that is what was the intention of the voters when they passed the measure at the polls, or whether they intended it to be part of the church night activity, the Wednesday night activity, where everybody goes and sits down in a group sort of thing and somebody calls out a number. And if that's what was intended, then the paragraph in the bill would be closer.
Yeah, if single code by oneself, is that in your opinion a recognized and accepted form of bingo?
Yes, it is. Nationwide, where it's been legalized, these break open cards have generally followed through. And as you pointed out, the entire concept of the show open type card offers or affords, let's say a club like the Elks as an example, the opportunity to derive an income from a game of bingo other than on a generally organized night. There's no call required. And the revenue, of course, is substantial compared, let's say, to what you would have if you simply had a game of bingo called by a caller. These cards are used virtually all over the country, where they've been legalized as also user calling secret bingo activity.
Are they akin to punch boards?
Yes, they are. They're definitely related. I wouldn't say they're in the same family, but they're related.
Are punch boards legal?
No, they're not.
Any discussion? Put the card away and email it.
Representative Lemonade?
Aye.
Representative Duty?
Aye.
Representative Frommeyer?
Aye.
Representative Lombard?
Aye.
Representative Rutherford?
No.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Chairman Meyer?
Aye. Captain? Oh, well, quickly ask of the center, the Supreme Court of the
That's correct.
The position of the area of local government.
And the committee has before it the Fourth Amendment, labeled the Fourth Amendment, SB 2341, third March 2nd. They're in two sessions, committee's recommendation and Representative Kongoski's recommendation.
You can go into what is that now? Is that?
Yes, we're going to go out to see what's the factor.
Anybody got an amendment? That's the thing I feel last year within myself in the process of being excused, was excused on a condition that he won't hear the defendant's particular point of view. Speak now, but I don't know
how
long
you guys are here.
As noted, the committee's decision last time would have forbidden, the current decision on this issue would forbid local political subdivisions from adopting and enforcing local agencies that prohibit the conduct of the game that we're otherwise legitimizing, that permits them to, by ordinance, license and regulate the conduct of the game, and further require that an organization intending to operate would punish the corporation commissioner the advance notification and the certification of tax against service. The motion on the amendment, Mr. McGregor?
What you're referring to, I'm sorry, I apologize, I can't find my book.
It's in your
binder
there.
What's the heading?
I'm sorry.
I'm
sorry.
My
second. The first word of which is committed, colon.
Yeah. March 2nd is the date.
I move the adoption of the first proposed amendment that starts on the second line after the heading committee colon.
Second?
I think there may be an ambiguity in the language, and I just want to be clear that we understand what we're doing in the last sentence. There's an organization which intends to operate bingo or lotto shall furnish. Does that mean that each time they want to run a Sunday night parlor, they have to notify, or is one notification sufficient for time immemorial?
Where is the word that you're talking about?
What a big deal. I'm trying to recall the discussion that preceded the inclusion of the requirement of advance notification. Was that your, did you suggest that, data?
Oh, maybe.
Do you recall, how important do you think that part of this is? Forgetting the ambiguity problem for a moment, but the general requirement of the notification.
I guess it was to allow advanced planning if state officials want to do anything about verifying whether or not it was legitimate or not. I'm not sure I was responsible for this suggestion.
Well, if the committee believes that that kind of notification of the state as distinguished from the filing of the certification is required.
The distinguished from what, Mr. Chairman?
The distinguished from the filing of certification of tax exempt status. Representative Devin?
No, I would think that by merely filing the exemption, you would be giving notice. The notice would be inferred at that point that you were going to operate a lottery or a bingo operation.
Then if you didn't know some work with other state statutes and regulatory structures, from your general examination of subject of you, do you see the reason why centralized state notification should be required of intent to operate?
Not necessarily required advanced notification, but I would think that all the other states would, to the extent they regulate at all, and they do seem to regulate, in one form or another, they would want some central notification. I would suggest to the committee that
notification of intent to run a bingo operation.
No notification of the
of
fact
intent.
of the actuality of the fact that they run bingo, so that the state knows in quantitative terms how many entities are running the operation, where they are located, etc. I would say it's fair to say that. All the states that regulate in this fashion, but there again, it was my understanding the committee didn't want to regulate anywhere near the degree that other states do. So as I said, you might consider an amendment of language so that the sentence would read, an organization which operates in the lotto shall furnish to the commissioner notification, delete advance, and delete intends to.
So how would it read then?
An organization which operates in the lotto shall furnish to the corporation commissioner notification of its lottery operation and a certification of its exemption, etc.
Yeah.
You scratch out proposed lottery operation and proposed lottery.
I agree with that as an amendment.
Chairman, what
about that? As a practical matter, would this allow somebody to conduct bingo or lottery for a year and then file a notification? If you don't put it in as a prior condition, don't you dilute the...
My reading of it would be that operation would have to be, the notification would have to go along with operation, that if you were operating and you had not notified, you wouldn't have met the terms of the statute. Doing both hand in hand, not one before the other, but hand in hand.
But passage is asked if we are authorizing them to operate, and we're in the FCC locality, you can't stop them. But we're then adding one more requisite, that is that somewhere along the line they notify the state of the exemption, which I presume really the Corporation Commission must have in order to keep revenue from knocking on their door.
Well, but suppose in future years, I'm not saying this to promote the company, but the state just wants to cut them free, wants a lottery tax, or simply wants to know who's conducting business and the purposes of monitoring how the act is working. I think that's desirable to have those figures, who's doing it where. And I think the question that Senator Lombard was raising was, if you don't require them to do that before they start the lottery operation, then are they essentially going to be doing it until somebody cracks down on them or, forcing a lot of enforcement action is unnecessary?
I think you've got an unenforceable provision if you don't put a time limit, a time period. I don't have any problem with saying contemporaneously, with the commencement of the operation, you must file a notification.
Yeah, within 30 days or with,
like that. I don't want to come down hard and fast and, if the church decides on one Sunday that it wants to next Saturday night have a bingo and then all of a sudden come up and find out, gee, we didn't file. I don't think the intent is to come down that hard, but I think we should have some time period in here.
There is maybe you want to stay on that one point, Mr. Chairman, but I'm just wondering, what is certification?
Well, I think that has a copy of it, a form.
Here on the front is your particular form.
But I have a form here. Well, that's the amendment that, I think the amendment, I'm not sure the amendment gets us where we want to go either. The point that was really giving us trouble was that the notification has to be repeated every time you're going to have an operation, which I'm sure isn't the case in the committee. It really was, we want notification if we want to allow of the initiation of a lottery program or conduct of activities.
Well, I think there's an amendment to take some of the ambiguity out of that viewpoint. David's in March.
An organization which operates the Royal Lotto shall furnish to the Corporation Commissioner within 30 days of commencement of its operation notification of something along that line. I want to put the phraseology in the right place. Is that what you want?
Why don't we? I'm going to let the clock be fair here.
Yeah. Well,
particularly the certification.
Pardon?
Before it starts, before first commencing a bingo or lotto operation, your organization conducting bingo or lotto shall furnish.
What do you mean,
David? That has the same problem, though. You know, are you referring to the first time?
Yeah,
or are you referring to the whole time?
The one and only time.
You know, the ambiguity is still there. If I see it, even if you phrase it that way.
How about saying an organization which intends to operate a lottery and so on shall furnish notice of such intention prior to the operation of the game period.
The initial
notice, the first notice, shall be sufficient for
subsequent
operations of the game.
No further notice shall be required.
Well, let me throw in this.
I got it.
This problem, because, you know, as with the certificate of exemption, your certification of exemption from payment of federal income taxes, you make a one-time filing. However, you can expect at any time, and of course, lose your status. But you don't have to refile an application every year, but you do file a return every year.
What you do is keep the corporation current standing,
which requires an annual filing with the Corporation Commissioner, yeah.
Okay, I got a thought out. Okay, how about this reading? On or before January 1st of each year, an organization which intends to operate bingo or lotto shall furnish the Corporation Commissioner a notification of its proposed lottery operation and a certificate of exemption from payment of federal income tax to charitable fraternal religious organizations.
If you don't furnish it before January 1st, you couldn't operate it that year, then do
it. Well, there isn't any penalty clause to not file it, but that's just a directive, I would think, at that point. If they don't file it, we haven't prescribed any kind of a penalty. We're not going to rip out their license or take their license away to operate.
Why don't you just say in any calendar year before commencing operation?
Well, give me that note. I mean, suppose the group first forms or first gets its 501c3 tax exempt status from the 15th of June and wants to run a 4th of July bingo game. They couldn't comply with that either.
I would think
they could in the calendar year.
I mean, if you just say that they file within the calendar year, in any calendar year in which you intend to conduct these operations, you must file the notification. It would require an annual filing in that way. If you start up operations the 15th of June, fine. The next year, if you intend to do it, you think of think ahead of time about it, you do it 1st of January or so.
I would think that an annual filing would be a good idea for several reasons. One, that we might have a situation where some sort of organization lost its certificate of exemption, and at that point, if they were required to file it again, or to say that they had that would keep non-certifiable organizations or an organization which was a certifiable organization which had lost exemption from engaging in the activity. Similarly, that would give at any given calendar year the corporation commissioner the exact notice of how many organizations were actually engaged in the business of conducting a lottery or a bingo operation.
Well, I think there is some kind of evidence that would affect states that before commencing the conduct of bingo or lotto, and thereafter, no later than January 31 of each succeeding year. An organization shall furnish to the corporation commissioner. I'm trying to build in both an advance notification and certification before the first conduct and then the element of repeated.
But if you have one gala year on the 4th of July, why put the pressure on the organization in subsequent years to file before January 15 or January 30?
Why couldn't we put it on the annual renewal card or franchise renewal card of the corporation? Maybe you intend to operate a 4 year and the next year operate a bingo game. Check the block, yes or no.
Well, we're not just dealing with corporations. We're going to be dealing with any number of possible organizations that may not necessarily already be registered as a corporation commissioner.
Regardless of what language you put in there, what's the penalty for not filing the certificate of exemption or the notification of intent to engage? Is there anything in the bill or the statute?
Not yet.
Not this one.
Okay.
We'll make it more difficult, Mark.
My point is then, if it was purely record keeping, and that's what we want to have, is just kind of a record, and it seems to me that it doesn't really matter too much how we phrase it as long as at some point we get the record. Because the problem that we're very concerned about the public health, welfare, and safety as to which organizations are engaging in this activity and when and how they're engaging in it, then maybe we need a penalty clause and need to have some very specific language.
I'm going to raise another question.
Well, and also,
when we're looking at this whole picture, I don't think that we really address the question either. Is there any particular state agency that should have an interest in overseeing this law as we create it
under state law. And if the agency should that be, should it be the Corporation Commission, or should it more properly be the Department of Revenue? I really begin to question whether we really even need to try to set up a mechanism to require advanced notification and certification.
Yeah, Chairman. Can I say one more time in proposed language? Prior to the commencement of a bingo or lotto game, an operating organization shall notify the Corporation Commission of its proposed operation and certify its exemption from payment of federal income taxes as charitable, paternal, etc. No further notification to the Corporation Commissioner of subsequent bingo or lotto games shall be required unless the organization has not conducted bingo or lotto operation within a 3-year period or unless the organization has lost its tax exempt status. Prior to the commencement of a bingo or lotto, I'll say operation, an operating organization shall notify the Corporation Commissioner of its proposed operation and certify, etc. No further notification to the Corporation Commissioner of subsequent bingo or lotto games shall be required unless the organization has not conducted a bingo or lotto operation within a 3-year period or unless the organization has lost its tax exemption. The 3-year period is arbitrary.
Unless it's lost its tax exemption.
Unless it's lost its tax exemption status.
And it is now, in effect, newly certifying that it is such to the court conducted if it's lost it.
That's right. We simply want to know when they've lost their tax exempt status, so that they don't continue to conduct lottery games and bingo games.
Then you used to require a motion to amend. What that means? Do you want to make a motion?
Yeah, I would move the language to say.
Yeah, I have simply raised the question of Dave, and I'm just wondering again whether the Corporation Commissioner is the proper department, the proper division to file this, or whether perhaps the Department of Revenue. Simply the Department of Revenue usually has more to do with the determination of the tax exempt status for charitable, paternal, or religious, or educational, or what have you, purposes. I'm just wondering if
Department of Revenue is okay by me, huh?
Well, that was the Corporation Commission in the first place. Didn't someone raise the point that they are the repository of these proof certificates? I think you've got to be limited on pointing that out.
He pointed out to me.
Okay. So he didn't turn that.
Is that the case today?
Who was told?
I'd like to have that language typed out and distributed. Let's go on to the emergency clause question and get to the other couple of bills and come back when it's ready for this
discussion.
Just one
amendment.
Discussion, Mr. Chairman. On his amendment, yeah. Well, we have to wait until we get it distributed. We'll come back to it.
I kind of got my thoughts.
All right, go ahead.
I don't know on any amendment, on this entire amendment, because I think we're perverting what the people wanted when they voted for this little old simple paragraph that's contained in the November 2 initiative. We've invited the localities to tax them. Now we're laying the groundwork for taxing them on a state level. And I think these people are subject to criticism. And I'm going to speak against this if it comes to the floor, because I think it's an overly vigorous attempt to lay the groundwork to tax this function. What we're looking at here is a bunch of social type organizations that want to do some minor gambling, and they said so loud and clear And we're laying the groundwork now for taking some of the bill away from the churches and the clubs and so forth. And I'm not going to be part of it.
If
you're
taxing
HIPAA,
we couldn't tax
them anyway, could we? Well, you're inviting regulations here, and this sort of thing. You did it in the first half of this, and I just feel I think it's a strained effort to get a bite of these people. The only one I can forgive for it is our revenue here.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Chairman Meyer?
Aye.
Chairman Rivers, aye.
vote no.
I'll probably store managers in a moment after I've gotten the list off and on that. 2406.
You finished
that
one?
Yeah.
Did that?
Yeah.
I'll come back to the room. Good.
I believe Representative Blumenauer is not present at the subcommittee hearing and would like the opportunity to address his voice. He's certainly with some club in the afternoon.
I'd like to know what happened.
Can I get my
Senator,
it's on House 2406, referred by subcommittee. 3 and Subcommittee C on March 3rd. The bill deals with the subject of notaries. It would authorize any registered Oregon voter to perform the function not served by notaries and would repeal all the laws that relate to notaries so that Oregon would essentially have no notaries as it now has them. The Subcommittee heard testimony from the title insurance industry, from an attorney in private practice, and from a representative of the Secretary of State's office as to the beneficial use of notaries. No testimony was heard in support of the bill, and the recommendation was that the bill be tabled.
Secretary Dillon, I apologize for having taken any action in terms of the recommendation. We're absent, so I would appreciate if you would give us any comments you have thoughts for the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I feel very strongly that having watched notaries in action, that it really performs no useful service. By and large, its performance is an essential proof that it makes citizens jump through and feel very strongly that when we took a bold action in a very small way on the tax examiner's board, I think that there's no useful service purpose served any longer with the notary function. And I think we can start the ball rolling in my judgment, we might be able to free citizens from this unnecessary burden. I hope that the judgment of the people here that there's something, some useful purpose served by having people jump through these unnecessary hoops, I will defer to their judgment. I think this would be very popular. I don't think it would change present practice significantly. And I think it would save a lot of red tape and unnecessary fees.
Any discussion?
I think, you know, just an answer to Earl's contentions, I might just say for a moment, Earl, some of the testimony we had before the subcommittee. Number one, I might add, most notaries do not charge fees. Most of them waive the fee-generated requirement. But one of the real practical problems that was brought up before the subcommittee was the fact that if we are pretty much alone in doing this, we can create some problems for some of our citizens that relates to notary requirements and notarized document requirements from other states, and there's some evidence in the Secretary of State's office that they are constantly being called on with regards to foreign documents being sent here that have to be notarized, beginning at the very notarized and certified and almost embossed and engraved and everything else from the very lowest level on up, and that if we did repeal, or basically repeal the notary public law, which we would be doing by this, that we could be creating some difficulties for our citizens as it relates to their transactions in other states.
What I'm trying to get at, I'm not talking necessarily about the fees that are charged to individuals, but we have thousands of notaries that we
we set up a bureaucracy to charge those folks. I know most people can have things notarized now free of charge, but that's not always the case. And additionally, the fact that there is an office in the Secretary of State that has to ride herd on this. But we're allowing allowing each citizen this power instead of outright repealing it. I think we are at least giving a nodding acceptance to the fact that perhaps we have to have some legal, some provisions to allow people to sign off on it, but to allow people to do it themselves. Not unlike what the bill we had before the committee earlier, allowing attorneys to attest to the parties to attest rather than having them notarized, verification of pleading. I see this being the same thing. I think it's rather inconsistent not to accord to private citizens the same flexibility that we just voted for attorneys. We ought to take people at their word. And just because some foreign countries still require the elaborate procedures you're talking about, seems to me to be no reason to make our citizens jump through those hoops.
Chairman.
Well, three responses are: one, our citizens are going to suffer by virtue of the fact that they can't get a document to a foreign country when that foreign country requires a notarization of the elaborate, not the elaborate type that we require now. So I question whether we're doing them a service there to make it more difficult. Secondly, if you look at the problem of locating a person's registered voter with the society as mobile as it is, and oftentimes not having updated addresses for people, it makes it much more difficult for a person to trace down the witness to a document, and hence the old proof of authenticity or not. Third, and we need a clincher on it, is in Section 3, where the state now requires notarization. The bill says that you can notarize it the same way you attest a will. And that's just a hassle, because to attest a will, you have to have two witnesses in the presence of each other and in the presence of the testator. Getting three people in the same room to do that in the kind of hurry that you have to get some documents notarized sometimes, as I did when I was in practice of law, you know, when you're coming right down to the wire in a transaction, I think it really complicates things for people. I just don't think the substitution is adequate.
May I ask a question? You're saying that you think when you're in a big hurry, which occasionally people are in, that it would be easier for them to track down a notary than it would to track down two other people in the same room.
Sometimes, yeah.
Could the converse be true?
Might be.
Okay, Lando. One other problem also, Earl, is the tightest to registered voters has to be citizens.
Oh, yeah.
And do you realize the constitutional problem that we have on the other bill that we have for that?
I'd be more than willing to amend the bill and have language suggested by Mr. Hinkle in the ACLU that I think is appropriate to amend the bill to extend it to Oregon residents. You know, that was just something we picked out of the air. We want to be able to give people the ability to notarize themselves, and I fail to see why that would not do for the vast majority of transactions. We could make it constitutional. I don't want to prolong the debate, Mr. Chairman. I think I would just move that 24 be sent to Florida with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion on the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to respond to one thing that Earl said earlier about the correlation between this bill and the attorney's verification bill. That bill was not passed for the convenience of the attorney. That bill was passed for the convenience of the party, members of the bar that opposed the change. It didn't serve any particular function for the attorney, and there is really, I can't see in the practice of law the connection that you draw between that bill, which passed, and this bill, because they serve different functions and services.
Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Blumenauer.
Aye.
Representative Dudick?
No.
Representative Fromar?
No.
Representative Lombard?
No.
Representative Richard? Representative Rutherford?
No.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Chairman Meyer?
No. For the motion. Move the table. Clerk, call the roll on the motion to table.
Subject to certain conditions. One, no other party involved in the
the proceedings should judge cause, or there is no other party involved who will provide adequate representation, or the suit is such that employment of private counsel is necessary to protect the public interest, judicial system, or the judge as a state officer. The subcommittee recommended the bill do pass.
This will be a motion to the full committee. Discussion on that motion.
Question.
Representative Gomez, and please call the roll.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Dudas. Representative Frommer.
Aye.
Representative Lombard.
Aye.
Representative Rutherford.
Aye.
Representative Gardner.
Aye.
Chairman Ryan.
Aye. The language on 2341 ready now?
Got one
on
the
front
one.
Okay. Hold
on.
Okay. 2206. Oh, yes, that's that. 2206. Yeah, I just missed it.
Mr. Chairman, also 2206 was heard by the full committee on February 24th. The bill would amend R.S.4.1 to 2450, which excuses servicemen of having to pay annual license fees imposed by any Oregon State Board or Commission. For example, barges. As to barges, the bill would create an exception to ORS 408.450. Servicemen would have to pay these annual dues. This statute was being amended. Was enacted during World War II to protect servicemen. The argument in favor of the bill is that lawyers, even the armed forces today, do not need this protection. It is alleged that their incomes are sufficient to cover barges. The bar would net approximately $5,300 a year from this bill. The argument against the bill is that even if servicemen who are lawyers don't need a protection, there may be the one exemption from the coverage of the statutory provision. Would it be better to repeal the statutory provision? And if repeal is considered, shouldn't it be preceded by a thorough investigation of who would be affected by such repeal? The full committee made no recommendation.
Discussion or motion on the bill? Representative Gardner?
Move to table 2206.
Gardner moves to table 2206. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Blumenau?
No.
Representative Dugan?
Aye.
Representative Frommer?
No.
Representative Kuhnga? Representative Lombard?
Aye.
Representative Rutherford?
Aye.
Representative Gardner.
Aye.
Chairman
Meyer. Aye. Okay. 2331.
I was reading, Mr. Chairman. Did everybody
get a copy
of the
license? Yeah, exactly. Operator might be just an organization. Prior to this commencement of an operation.
Okay, that's fine.
An organization shall notify.
Yeah.
Where does that see? Group line, share with me that Bob becomes it. At the end of the line, A becomes M, and the word proposed operator in the second line becomes organization.
I didn't want to see it differently.
Okay,
all right.
I just wanted to
clear if that works. I don't know what it covers me. I think it's the proposed operation that makes it sound as if there's a proposal to be made to the state to which some response would be made. I wonder if any advocate he might use there.
Intended, would that be better?
Operate. Right. The amendment pending is just in case the draw and organization place that eighth post operator. Any objection to that amendment? Representative Fenmore moves the adoption of the amendment as amended. Discussion? Objection?
I don't believe took any action on the paragraph that preceded that language that we were having some concern with.
Well, this is. This is a partial amendment to that quoted paragraph. You revert back to Richard Bronte's proposed amendment. This amendment, which has just been adopted, amends that larger amendment, becomes a new second sentence. Is there a motion to adopt the Bronte March 2nd, 1971 amendment as amended? Representative Sandonia?
I would move that.
Discussion?
Thank you. Last time I raised a question about whether or not the bill that we were adopting would permit local agencies, local organizations to be licensed and therefore have to pay a fee and therefore could become part of the tax or revenue major. And I would just like to again register my concern if that's what this does. I realize that the bill does say the measure was passed by the board, it does say regulation, but I think that does not comport to the voters a licensing fee. It might mean to us here a licensing fee, but I don't think in the commonality of cases that would be the interpretation given. So I don't feel that I can support something which would lead to a license fee. And I might say that I discussed it. Representative Richards mentioned it to me on her own, and she was very concerned about that as well.
Just in response to that, I think that the power to license is necessary to the bill, and I think it's necessary. Basically, if we're going to provide for regulation, we should also provide for the mechanism for local government to offset the cost of that regulation. I think the license fee, whatever it would have to be reasonable. I don't see it as a revenue measure, but basically it's an offset to the necessary cost of regulating and monitoring these games.
Yeah, I also suspect that you could get to the situation where a local unit of government might make that fee so high as to essentially amount to a tax but I think that the conductor at the game at that point would have a valid and constitutional objection to that being in effect a hidden tax rather than a fee, rather than a license fee, and might be able to get it thrown out. Likewise, it seems to me that at least in most home rule, well, even in non-home rule counties, you've got a situation where I suppose if you have it to the point where it was attacked, and this is what most people didn't want, they have the power by the initiative of a referendum to throw it out. I think I have to agree that at least to a certain extent, you're granting the power to regulate carries with it an inherent power to charge some reasonable license fee or administrative fee to carry out the regulation.
Representative Rutherford, do you have a motion? Otherwise, you confront the issue you're raising in connection with the approval of the entire amendment.
That's what I had in mind.
Representative Gardner?
Just a comment before we, I guess, get into this. I spent 2 years on the city council in Hillsborough, and I cannot ever remember a situation in which we had a license fee. Most of the time, it was less than the amount that was necessary to basically supervise or regulate whatever activity it was we were licensing. We never used a license fee to try to keep any activity from coming into town, basically only to offset the cost of the regulation. I think it's a real sad day in this legislature if this does go through without the ability for the local government to get some kind of a feedback off that it's cost. I think it's a sad day that we go back to that principle.
Any discussion on the amendment as amended? Any business?
I couldn't agree more with Representative Lombard's observation. The second part of that first part of the amendment, in my judgment, not only invites the locality to license it to death if they want, but there are certain localities that are going to be struggling to do this anyway. And I think this perverts the intent of the populace when it voted on this issue. And furthermore, I think the second part of that amendment removes the first part of the amendment. We say in the first part where you won't do anything to stop it, and then the second one we say you can license, however, in any family, you'll talk a $20,000 a year license on them or something like that. And I think that had a back in court.
Well, of course.
And so will we. I don't think this will get out of the legislature in the first place with this kind of amendment. But let me say that I respect Mark's service in the city of Hillsborough, but that isn't Amity or Dallas or some of the other cities.
If I might respond to Mark, I'm sympathetic to mandated cost too, but we didn't create the mandate. It seems to me that we're here interpreting what was said in the voter tax measure. And while to us regulation might mean licensing and taxes, I don't think that's what the voters had in mind, as near as I can divine what they said in that bill.
But we are legitimizing a new form of activity, which is not going to be genuine enough for everybody. It's going to require a certain amount of policing, a certain amount of supervision that's going to be purely local, or almost purely local. Any discussion on amendment as amendment?
Just one last comment.
Okay.
To your point, I don't think that voters contemplated the issue that we're discussing right now. But I do feel that inherent in any grant of authority to regulate comes with it the proposition that someone's got to pay for the regulation. And who's that going to be? If you're going to require that the local subdivisions do this by ordinance, then I feel that they should have the power to make those people who engage in the game pay for that cost of regulation. It's that simple.
And I think local governments that abuse the prerogative of advancing past legislature that in this form, I'm going to find myself confronted with a demand to totally roll back any such authority. Well, anyway, maybe it's actually a limited limit.
Mr. Chairman, maybe take the question that's before us.
Question before us regarding the adoption of Mr. Brunson's March 2nd, 1977 proposed amendment, noted committee as amended, beginning in the second sentence by the language of the amended FOMA amendment.
Okay.
That doesn't give you a point.
What? Yeah.
Okay. Any question?
Amendment of amendment? I think as a practical matter, most towns, especially most small towns, aren't even going to attest to regulations.
I think that's probably implicit in their powers as a municipal corporate entity. And I don't think we need it.
This would
be
the layoff
families
in my district.
I'm sorry.
It's not fair to I like to drive to a town and
say this
to
anything. Well, I said maybe especially in the amendment of the amendment, call it an answer. What's the name? Clerk will call it an answer.
Representative Bruner.
Aye.
Representative Dugan. Aye. Representative Thurman.
Aye.
Representative Lombard.
Aye.
Representative Richards. Representative
Rutherford.
No.
Representative Gardner.
Aye.
Chairman Lyons.
Aye. Continue
with
the bill. Motion
on the bill
as amended.
Representative Gardner. Move the bill as amended, be enrolled and placed, and since it's sort of a DPAS recommendation.
You wouldn't
want to
enroll yet.
That would be a problem. It 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 would be a
problem. Representative
Fromer. Aye.
Representative
Lombard. Aye.
Representative
Rutherford. No. Representative Gardner. Aye. Chairman Myers. Aye. Mr. Chairman, I feel constrained to notify the chair of the committee that I'm always the bill on the floor for the reasons I stated.
The final minority report.
I'll presume my ability to get by the gavel is good. Well, we have to get it. No, I don't
have
to
get it.
We
have
to get it.
Well, no, but if you want to offer them policy choice, it's cleaner to have the minority report than to send it back to committee and have another bill drafted up the same way. We can do it cleanly on the same day if you get it down.
You don't have to file one. Let's take what you said as a notice of the article for public hearing. $30 for the ending. Well, let's see. You're going to have a reason. You have two business days, don't you?
Tuesday.
Yeah. Okay. 5 p.m. Tuesday. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, so that the four would have a third choice, I'll give notice of intent to file a minority report. Whether I do or not remains to be seen.
I have three bills on the discovery bills. I'd like to recess for about 2 minutes for the structural aid committee. I'd like to go very quickly.
In your book, they take code amendments 311-77 today.
at the front of the bill, 2257. Okay. See that? Oh, that's good. Adam is signing the amendment. The amendments are right. The amendment is handwritten comment, the conflict is closed, and then the face of the amendment.
Representative
Gibbons. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to do this, and I'm not in the habit of weaseling, as I think the committee knows, but I'm not a practicing lawyer, and I hate to really follow this thing by picking sides on 5 or 25. Can I abstain without looking like a jellyfish? What I'm afraid of is that we're not going to get a decision.
Well, you have to have 5 votes, otherwise it's just fail. So you're non-voting.
Really, I'm not saying.
Most of you are going to vote no.
See,
that's all of us.
Continue
with the roll call then.
Representative
Perlman?
No.
Representative
Hoffman?
Yes.
Representative Gibbons?
Yes.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Chairman
Miles? No. Okay, further limits to section 1, section 2,
it's not an amendment, but just for the legislative history, it is clear in my understanding that when we're talking about any party to the action, we mean a person named as a party. We do not mean a witness. Person to be served.
That's correct.
I would ask that the record reflect any dissension from that view, if there are any in the case.
I think that's in the spirit of the meeting of that reference. All right, for the comments or questions on section 1, section 2. Section 3. Dennis?
On page 4, line 14, there's a recommendation for the insertion of the word any type of after the word for. So it would read, on whom a request for any type of discovery has been made. That was from Professor Lacey.
I need your name.
Line 14, page 4. The amendment would be after the word for to add the word any type of. Now that's a Lacey amendment?
That's a Lacey amendment.
Right. If you could comment on that.
Inasmuch as Section 3 now appears in all the bills, Professor Lacey wanted to make it clear that discovery was not only interrogatory, but was any form of discovery. Just because this is mainly an interrogatory bill doesn't mean that discovery is only interrogatory for purposes of
Lord, what is funny?
I agree it might add clarity. I mean, Professor Lacey's concern today in the letter was simply that he wanted to make clear that this provision, the one having to do with protective orders, and the next provision having to do with special discovery, would just be set out by themselves and apply to all forms of discovery. And he thought this language might make that absolutely clear that it's intended to apply to all forms rather than just the specific form where the language is included
on
the bill.
Further discussion, amendment? Question. If we do it in this and all three bills, and not all three bills pass, but one or two do pass, what do we end up with in the general scheme of things in the statutes? Have we got a mess?
I don't think so, because we still have at least the two forms of discovery that are now provided deposition and motion to produce, so I suppose it would just be applying to those two forms of discovery without having interrogatories be part of the statutory.
Well, let's assume we don't get the interrogatories passed, that we do get the request for admissions and inspection ones passed, and they have this same provision. Then do we have a problem with this broad a provision in those bills coming back and relating to restricting or what have you with the deposition statute?
I don't think it would be a problem. This is a little bit broader than the current provision of the deposition statute, but it's just basically the provision of the federal rule that applies to all the forms of discovery there, and if the Oregon law,
are we appealing this present section dealing with protective order?
Yes,
that's what we're going to do. We've got one of the right hands. Any discussion on the amendment? All right. Any further amendments to section 3? The minute first. Section 4.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
On page 5, line 3, Professor Lacey suggested that the word parties may obtain discovery be deleted, and the words for all forms of discovery, comma, parties may inquire be inserted, so that the sentence would read, for all forms of discovery, parties may inquire regarding any matter not privileged, etc., etc. Again, same rationale.
The new section should be clear without a bit.
That's correct.
The motion to drop that amendment? Discussion of the amendment? Objection? All right. Further amendments, questions, concerns of section 4, the name of the third. Section 5.
I'm a student, a law student at Oregon. I'm an intern for this committee. And I brought along another suggestion for special license. And I'm sorry that we'll have to go back to section 2 to meet it.
Give it the line.
Okay, section 2, line 35.
I have no such line in mind. Would it be in addition to?
Oh, the last line of the
page.
Okay, instead of an order excluding such matters as from being given in evidence, it would read, an order excluding such matters as the court shall designate from being given in evidence. And this, and to the next page, line 1, there's a contrast here between this and the change made here on line 1, the next page. This would read, an order directing the jury to presume...
Hold on, okay. We're on page 4, line 1, the committee, okay.
An order directing the jury to presume those matters sought by discovery to be established in accordance with the claim of the party seeking the order. The effect of this change would be to bring it more in line with Rule 37, in that the first change allows the court more discretion in excluding matters from evidence, and the second change limits the matters that the court can establish as fact to those that have been sought by discovery that has been that the person hasn't come through with. So, and this is consistent with Rule 37 and the federal rules. As it reads in both, the court has the same discretion in each case.
The motion to adopt the proposed amendment in line 35.
So
any discussion? Any objection? Motion on line 1 of page 4. For the record, let's make clear that the preceding amendment was to insert after the word line 35, page 3, the word as the court may designate.
As the court. So, and they designate, right.
So you said May.
May.
Next line, is there a motion to, let's take line 1, a motion to substitute the word very, or such, and after the word matters, to insert stop by discovery.
So moved.
Discussion? Objection?
There would be an identical change in 2269.
Well, right, right, just remind us about that one, I guess. Okay, section 3, 4, 5, 8, section 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Excuse me, I'm wondering why Section 9 isn't named 469.00. Why is that in this bill? The protective order against an agency, given the same protection as you do against the
government. Are you on page 8?
I'm on page 7 and 8.
Okay, turn over to 8.
Yeah.
Lines 11 and 12.
Okay, understand that, but what we're doing is saying that the same protections that we give be given to a party under a protective order with respect to civil discovery are applicable to the director of an administrative agency in carrying out administrative discovery pursuant to a specific statute that apparently gives the scene another investigative power. Is that correct?
Brad, would you put a comment on the question?
Well, this, all these last sections were added by legislative council and were simply prompted by the repeal of 45181 and the substitution of 45181 and existing protective order statute with the federal, what is basically the federal will protective order statute. And I think they just substituted the cross-reference to this new act, and 45181 won't be in the statute any longer because of the repeal. This protective order is a little broader than 45181, but the substance is the same.
At present, the protective order statute that applies to depositions in civil actions is applicable in these proceedings.
Right.
So it simply substituting the new one for the old one. Any discussion on the bill as amendment? The motion on the bill?
The floor is contested.
Any discussion?
Was the very much the bill being broke?
Oh, yeah. Did you see that in your motion?
Green rule.
Any discussion?
Not written.
Thank you, Paul.
Aye.
Representative Brumman.
I don't have a position on it. The argument in favor of the amendment would be that it would conform the bill to the language of federal rule. The argument against the amendment, I suppose, would be that it could lead to threats to admit that the defendant was negligent or that the damage in such an amount were reasonable. I mean, request to go to opinions rather than facts. The federal rule goes as far as, like, yes, the cases had a difficult time deciding what was a fact and what was opinion and what was a mixture of the two, and so it just went all the way and allowed it to come out in the most recent federal rule. But it could lead to some abuse possibly, but maybe not. It would be an advantage if it were amended to conforming with the federal rule.
Was it succeeding in the Barbara type of treatment in front of the committee?
The committee followed the form of 2013 when the bill was approved by this committee at the last session, which didn't have this language in it. The language comes from the most recent federal rule. And it could lead to some possible abuse, I suppose, depending on what attorneys tried to do with asking for admissions of opinion or asking for admissions of the application of law and fact. I just don't know whether allowing it to go that far would lead to abuse or not.
Well, it might be well to take the little more conservative approach right now and see how it operates. I don't know. Is there a motion to amend to adopt the amendment? So what's your next amendment?
Okay. So the same section. And subsection 5 on page 3, line 8. It was recommended that the word opposition be deleted and the word objection be included. And I can't see the rationale there. Maybe Professor Professor can.
I think that the language used in the federal rule is a little confused. The sections are being transposed. I don't think there would be any substantive difference, but it seems to me that the federal language most applicable probably is opposition.
The
federal position is probably opposition, so
that
I'm not sure the amendment
would have to come. Mr. Chairman, in Northern Line 4, on that same page, the word objection is used twice. And it appears to me odd that the word opposition would be used in Line 8. Aren't they referring to the same thing? If we meant change, we should consider all those words, should we not?
Well, the question, I guess, Representative Sunmar, would be whether opposition to the request for admission could include not an objection, but a response that's inadequate. I mean, opposition is a little bit broader than objection in that the opposing party could respond to give an insufficient response, and which could be interpreted as being opposition in the sense of not fully complying with the request. So, opposition is probably the broader word, but object is normally going to be an objection that would be an issue. So I don't think if the amendment is adopted, it would change the bill substantially.
Okay, Lacey,
I move that we put to the word objection. Objection, only page 3.
Becky, objection. Without objection or opposition. What's the amendment,
Billy? On line 18 on the same page, it was recommended that the word held be included after the word was, so that it would read, the request was held improper or objectionable.
Okay.
Could it seem like you raised a comment regarding the prior amendment? I'm just noticing the language in all the other sections that contain similar language seem to use the word opposition rather than objection. If this is intended to be a parallel, a repeated section, I was just looking at 2259 and 2257. I was just concerned about consistency among the three bills. On 2259, for example, page 3 of engrossed 2259, line 14, uses the word opposition. Also, I believe in 2257.
Unless you reconsider the vote by which you made the previous amendment. Okay, let's go ahead. The next amendment, line 18, the request was proposed to include sound.
There, did you want my comments on that?
Yes.
The basis for that is simply to form the federal rule. The Water Bill provision is based on 3013, which has the language that's before you, but the federal rule requires that the objection actually have been made. The way the bill reads now, it could be that the party could raise for the first time at the hearing on the request for attorney's fees that the request for admission was improper. And I suppose the argument would be that if the person is going to take the position that that's an improper request for admission, they could file the objection, since there is a procedure established for filing the objection. They could not be allowed to raise for the first time at the hearing on attorney's fees, so that A should be limited to a request that had been held objectionable when an objection had actually been made.
Motion to back that amendment. Sure, maybe back to that amendment. Any other discussion? Any objection? Okay. Moving to the section 2. Section 3.
In section 3, there's a recommendation, a parallel to the recommendation that was made in section 2057. The very first four words, the parties may obtain discovery, would be deleted, and the words, for all forms of discovery, parties may inquire, would be inserted.
We're looking about that.
It would read, for all forms of discovery, parties may inquire regarding any matter not privileged.
And line Page 3921. To substitute the word objection for opposition. Objection? Objection?
I don't know if it would lead to any problems. The language, this is the exact language of federal rule throughout, this part using the word opposition. I don't know right now whether there would be any implications or situations where this would preclude federal case law from being applicable, but if the committee wants to have the language as closely conforming to the federal rule as possible to take advantage of any federal cases that might be interpreting similar language, it might create problems to use a different word than is used in the federal rule.
Dave, you know anything from which the opposition has been any other objection?
I don't, and I have a hard time competing about it.
The record again, for whatever it's worth, it seems to me that they're synonymous, and using different words would leave a different impression. I mean, the broadest construction of the exception. If they are synonymous, I'd feel much more comfortable keeping the language of federal rules. I would refer to the wisdom of the attorneys on the committee that are flipping back and forth in terms of sections and putting the words in and out. I noticed a slight flushed look on the face of Professor Patrick, and therefore feel somewhat uncomfortable. I don't know exactly where to object, because I occasionally it's a little hard for me to follow the turns in the road, but I, to the extent that it's possible to object to moving away from the language of the federal rules in the bill that we already passed out, that we now have back before us, I would like to make that objection now.
You may not want to make the objection, you may want to oppose the move back. Away from the federal rules.
Well, I think that if the motion, if the reconsideration motion is defeated, then you move to 2258 and reverse ourselves there so that we'd be consistent. It's got to be one or the other.
That's right now.
Yeah, but this is not the decision we have to put over. Clerk will call around the motion to reconsider. I'm sorry, I have to reconsider to amend. Motion to amend by substituting.
Okay.
Yes, at line 21, page 34.
Thank you.
absolutely consistent. The certain language is parallel between the bills, but in 2258, it's a little different, slightly different situation, the way it would come up under a request for an admission as opposed to the way the situation is presented to the court under a request for production or interrogatory. So I don't think it would destroy the statutory scheme if that inconsistency remained, but it might be clean. Without thinking through all the ways it could come up, it might be the same wording all the way through, but I don't think it's
You moving to reconsider? I think we're going to send that or not? Not remove that.
What, you mean on 2258?
Yeah. Reconsider the amendment, substituting objection for opposition.
Well, I didn't hear all of what Larry said, but if this is the thing that's a federal rule.
He said there's no exact parallel to the federal rule in this case, but in the interrogatory case, there's precise language identity.
Well, I would still move to reconsider. I'd like to see it consistent all the way through. So if there's any federal precedent, it would carry all the way through the federal statute. I move to reconsider the federal amendment.
Objection? Objection?
Move that we change objection to opposition and restore the money to the same base bill.
Objection? Opposition? Okay, now we're requesting four, once again. Do you have any amendments, Bill?
No.
Further questions from the committee? Amendments from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Perfect. Let me call them. Did you read out
the
motion?
I was.
Do you have anything further, Larry?
Other than the amendment of 49.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. The women are moved to House Bill 2258 to be sent to the floor as amended in regards to the due pass recommendation. Circle County Act. Okay, let's go to the first section two.
Mr. Chair, the same changes that were made in 2257 should be made to line 28 and 29 page 3. Sure. So that line 28, page 3, would read, "In order excluding such matters as the court may designate from being given in evidence."
The motion. The amendment line 28, page 3, and that's the
vote.
Any discussion? Any objection?
Mr. Chief, could you read the amendment one more time?
Sorry. I'll tell you the amendment after we go there. Line 28 would be amended by adding after the word matters. As the court may designate. Put amendment to the other name. Any discussion? Objection? Okay, so I think we have a separate amendment there.
Right, line 29. An order directing the jury to presume those matters sought by discovery to be established in accordance with the claim.
The motion?
The
Blumenauer moves to amend line 29 by substituting those for such and after matters to be paid soft by discovery. Any objection? Any discussion? Objection? Okay. Section 2. Section 2. Section 4.
On page 4, mark 7. There was a recommendation that after the word for, insert the word any type of, for any type of.
That's conforming to the earlier.
Right.
Mind you.
Line 8.
Line 8. Okay.
Who's the amendment? The amendment of line 8 by after the word whom adding any type. Any type of. Is that correct? Yep. Jesse? Jesse? Is it clear in section 4? Section 5?
Beginning of section 5, the word parties may obtain discovery are recommended to be deleted and replaced by the word for any form, for all forms of discovery, comma, parties may inquire regarding any matter.
Say that out to the other bill. Motion?
So moved.
That's going to go with. So moved. Discussion? Objection? Okay. Section 6, 7, 8, and all conforming 9, 10, 11, that's the end of the day.
I'm going to move that House Bill 2059 as amended to report a source to be passed recommendation on any quote.
So, any discussion?
I have a question. Bill, when you were here earlier, I made a note. Watch out for the definition of representation. Be sure it's defined. Students have heard your testimony. I can't pass it now to the bill. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
Didn't that go to who is the representative for purposes of the work product? Is that perhaps what you made a note
on? Oh, the rest of it was whether it covered the investigators and so on?
I think that was the.
Yeah, what section is that?
Okay, that would be page 2, section 4. Section 2, section 4.
Yeah, that's the exact answer to the federal rule as far as it goes.
Excuse me, that was not the federal rule language. That was different enough for it.
I think the committee, there's an amendment before the committee last time, I believe, to define representative that was voted down on the plan. Let me see if it's
correct. That's
correct. Yeah, I think there were parentheses. There are parentheses in the federal rules, right, including intercounty consultant, surety, and indemnity insurer, or agent, close parentheses. And I think the committee voted that amendment down at the last group session. Okay.
We're
going
to add that committee language.
That language is in the federal rule, and your spokesman put that in, and that did not pass.
And the language in the federal rule, again, but it's what?
Right
after representative, there are parentheses that says, including his attorney, consultant, surety, indemnitor, insurer, or agent. Close parentheses.
Would it be out of order to move that that be?
That's the note.
Even though we voted it down one?
I don't. I accept the motion.
Okay. I would move that that language be added to the bill.
That's not a motion.
Yeah,
I recall your discussion with related to the CC.
You didn't come question arise as to what status a private investigator was the independent contractor occupied with respect to this kind of protection. I think that was a concern. I think actually it was Reverend Kulindowski who raised it, or at least elaborated on it. The concern in my mind would be whether or not a private detective would be, or an independent investigator would be covered by this language, and it wouldn't appear so.
Well, he could not be, and I think the key is why I make the motion number one, because it's the federal rule, and there is a case law to support it, and secondly, it clearly defines what a representative is, and is not. I think that's desirable.
Federal rule would exclude someone in the status of a private investigator. Is that correct, sir? What do you know?
I'm not sure. My understanding
application.
That, well,
The original federal, this is the most recent federal rule that just amended, I guess, 1970, 1972. As I understand it, the original federal rule limited it more to attorneys, the worst product doctrine to attorneys, and then the more recent federal rule followed some a line of cases that extended it to all sorts of representatives beyond attorneys. That's the one listed here, and that was incorporated in the revised federal rule. I'm not sure that in some ways the revised federal rule may not go beyond existing case law, but I'm not Oregon case law, but I'm not positive of that. I think, as I recall, Representative Cromer last time made a statement that the intention of the committee was to have the definition of representatives to be developed by interpretation of the courts. Is that correct?
I may have said that. I'm not sure it's a very wise statement.
That's sort of embarrassing back in the house. So what I really want to avoid is the problem of work product, problem of what the investigator develops, and so on.
If I understand it, if we took the seven-year approach, the information that the private investigator would be able to get would not be covered as far as being work product. It would not be work product.
Well, from what Professor Patrick said, the private investigator's work would not be discoverable. Am I correct?
I think that's correct. It's something a private investigator qualifies as a consultant or agent.
Okay.
Well, it would be discoverable upon
showing.
You'd have to make clear the showing. It'd be a qualified privilege.
It would be bringing within the word product.
But the point is, I'm not sure that even the present one is pretty much present, meaning that even the amendment makes clear, crystal clear, that a private investigator is under this section. Investigator, is investigator mentioned in the bracket of material?
No, it's not.
You can see it.
Attorney, consultant, juror, or agent.
In respect of the amendment?
We're looking at the wrong word representing the right one. It's over on page 3, line 3. That's where the language is in the federal rule. It doesn't change the nature of the discussion, but you know, and then that's where it would go.
Yes, right. That makes more sense, too.
Where's that?
Well, page 3, line 3.
Oh, line 3.
Definition. I don't believe that page 3, line 3 is the proper representative. I have a federal rule here and it used to have them. In the federal rule, it comes up with the representative as it's used on line 32, page 1. Representative, parentheses and definition, comma.
discuss the comments.
Oh, I see.
You're right, by Hunter Ross.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
So it's going to be said?
Move you correct, it's good news there.
Yeah.
It goes back to the Safety Committee earlier adoption of the amendment as adoption to place it in the proper locations in terms of the corresponding language of the federal rules, which would be in line 32H2 of the Illinois spread. Okay. The going to section 3, 4, 5.
Did we double wait with respect to section 5, Mr. Chairman?
We did, didn't we?
Yeah.
We did.
All the way through.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Did we back that motion?
Yeah.
Six, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, aligning section 7 to 2. Any citizens committee? No? Cut? Motion? What was the agenda?
Move the House Bill 2259 as amended be engaged and since the full recast recommendation.
That's it. Let the call the roll.